Yeah.
Always picture those trucks, you know, the ones packed with supplies. That's what comes to mind when we think about humanitarian aid. But what if there's like maybe a smarter way to help people when they're dealing with a crisis, a way that puts the decision making back in their hands?
Yeah, that's the whole idea behind cash and voucher assistance,
Yeah, that,
CVA.
okay.
It's
Yeah.
about giving them the resources to choose what they need most instead of assuming we know better.
So instead of like pre-packed boxes of stuff,
Yeah.
it's giving people cash or vouchers to buy what they need.
Exactly.
Okay, makes sense.
CVA blog.pdf actually explains that cash assistance can be either, physical money or digital transfers
Oh, interesting.
straight to those who need it. It's all about flexibility. Vouchers, on the other hand, are a bit more specific. You can think of them like those specialized gift certificates you get,
Yeah.
the ones you can only use for certain things, specific goods or services at particular vendors.
Got it. So cash is for when you want someone to choose whatever they need. And vouchers are maybe if you want to sort of nudge them towards certain things.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay, I get it. So why is everyone talking about CVA these days? Why is it gaining traction?
Well, I mean, it's incredibly empowering, right? Put yourself in their shoes. Imagine being in a crisis. Instead of getting a box of pre-selected stuff, you get to decide what your family actually needs.
Right. Yeah, you get to pick what actually matters most in that moment.
That's it. It's about agency and, dignity, too. CVA problem.pdf also makes the point that it can be way more efficient than traditional aid.
In what way?
Well, you cut out all those logistical middlemen, you're letting the market do its thing.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It seems like it should be simpler, but this source also gets into some of the trickier parts, right?
It does.
CVA problem.pds actually seems to suggest that the way aid works right now, the system itself, might actually make it harder to do CVA effectively.
That's right. The author uses this term, coordination failure.
Okay.
That's when things like unclear guidelines or, conflicting goals get in the way of effective aid. What's interesting is that even the idea of cash gets confusing.
Wait, what? How can cash be confusing?
Well, you've got physical cash, then you've got digital transfers, then mobile payments.
Good.
They're all forms of money, of course. But they work in very different ways, and they can have different effects on financial systems and local economies.
I hadn't thought about it that way.
It's important to remember that all cash isn't necessarily the same.
Yeah, okay. So we need to be more precise with our language.
Exactly. And that kind of ties into a bigger point the author makes.
Okay.
They argue that those traditional aid agencies, they might actually be kind of resistant to CVA.
And why is that?
It changes how they do things. It disrupts their well-established way of doing things,
Right, like it's a whole different model of how to do aid.
It is. There's that line, you probably remember it, about how it doesn't take 20 NGOs to load an ATM card.
Yeah, that one stuck with me.
It kind of sums up the tension there, right?
It does, it's a bit provocative.
Yeah, and it really gets to the point. CVA shakes things up. It challenges the existing power structures within the humanitarian aid world.
Okay, so let's dive into some of these specific challenges that the CVA problem.pdf brings up. One that really surprised me was this whole thing about central banking. You don't usually think of central banks when you think about humanitarian aid.
It's a crucial point, though. The author points out that central banks are, well, surprisingly absent from CVA planning, which, when you think about it, is a bit strange. They're the experts on money.
Right, they're the ones managing financial systems, making sure there's enough cash going around.
Yeah, and think about things like the flight to cash phenomenon that usually happens during a disaster. Central banks, they know how to handle that. So their expertise could really be a game changer. They could help make sure CVA works the way it's supposed to. It's true. Like, imagine central banks working with governments ahead of time, before a crisis even hits. They could set up lines of credit specifically for CVA. That way, when something does happen, there's a system already in place to get cash flowing to those in need.
It makes a lot of sense when you put it that way.
Okay.
Okay, so central banking is key.
It is.
But what about financial inclusion?
Right.
That's always a good thing, right?
Well, not necessarily that straightforward. CVA problem.pdf actually brings up some real concerns about the push for financial inclusion,
Okay.
especially when it's all about digital payments.
I'm listening. What are the downsides?
Well, think about it. What about folks who don't have smartphones?
Right?
Or people who just aren't comfortable with tech? You risk excluding them completely.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And then there's data privacy and surveillance, right? If everything you do financially is being tracked digitally...
That's a little unnerving.
Yeah, there's a balance to strike. We want financial inclusion, but not at the cost of creating new vulnerabilities.
Right. We need to think about the trade-offs.
It has to be about giving people real choices, real control over how they access and use their money.
Okay. Makes sense. So that brings us to another tricky question. Conditionalities.
Right.
Is it ever okay to, like, put conditions on giving someone cash assistance? I know CVAblog.pdf mentioned something called conditional cash transfers.
Yeah, that's a big debate in the world of humanitarian aid.
Mm-hmm.
On one hand, you've got the argument that, well, you can use conditionalities to encourage certain behaviors, like getting vaccinated or sending kids to school.
So you use aid to kind of nudge people towards doing things that are good for them.
Yeah.
Mm.
But CVAproblem.pdf kind of pushes back on that, and they bring up a really striking statistic. They say between 40 and 70% of these value vouchers, you know, the ones we talked about, are actually sold at a discount in local markets.
Wow, that's a huge gap. Why would people do that?
It tells you that maybe people don't value those specific goods or services as much as they value just having cash.
So they'd rather have the flexibility.
Exactly. They're willing to lose money just to have cash in hand.
Hmm. Interesting.
So it really makes you wonder, are conditionalities effective? Or are they just messing up the market?
Yeah, creating all these unintended consequences.
It's something to think about.
It is. Okay, so this is all making me think about aid in a whole new way.
Yep.
There's so much more to it than I realized.
There is.
CVAproblem.pdf also brings up this concept of the sociopolitical utility of cash. What does that even mean?
It's a fascinating point. They use the example of Syrian refugees in Turkey.
Okay.
Apparently, these refugees were converting their digital aid back into physical cash.
Why would they do that?
Because physical cash has this, like, enduring value. Everyone accepts it. It's reliable. And it's awfully anonymous.
Hmm.
You know, it gives people a sense of security, of control. And in unstable situations, digital systems might not be able to do that.
So it's not just about the money itself.
No. It's about the freedom that comes with it. The author actually argues that whoever controls the payment systems, they have the power.
Uh-huh.
And that power can be used to exclude people or to keep track of what they're doing.
Mm. A bit unsettling, especially in the world of aid, right?
Definitely. And CVAproblem.pdf actually gives some examples of how these digital systems have been used to exclude people. It shows why we need to be really careful about how we design and use them.
Okay, I get it. It's not as simple as just giving people access to financial systems.
Right.
We have to think about the potential for misuse.
Exactly.
Okay, the next challenge they bring up is a little confusing. Customer acquisition cost. They use this example about a Turkish bank providing free services to Syrian refugees. How does that work?
It's a bit of a head scratcher at first, but think about it like this.
Okay.
You know those free trials you see everywhere?
Yeah, yeah.
Or loyalty programs?
Right.
Companies are happy to lose a little money up front to gain a new customer because in the long run, those customers become valuable.
Okay, so they're playing the long game.
Exactly. So in this case, the bank is basically seeing the cost of providing these services to the refugees as an investment. They're acquiring new customers.
So they're writing it off as part of their involvement in the CVA program.
Exactly. It's interesting, right? It shows how businesses can be involved in humanitarian work and also advance their own goals at the same time.
It's not always purely altruistic, I guess.
It rarely is. And that's a good reminder. CVAproblem.pdf is really encouraging us to look at all the different players involved and what motivates them.
Yeah, we need to see the whole picture. Okay, so the last challenge they talk about is the multiplier effect.
Mm.
And it sounds like physical cash and digital payments, they have very different impacts on local economies.
Right.
Can you explain that a little?
Well, the author argues that physical cash, it tends to stay local.
Oh.
So when you use cash at the local market, that money is probably going to be spent again in the same community.
So it keeps circulating locally.
Exactly. And that boosts the local economy. It creates this ripple effect.
It makes sense.
Now, digital transactions, they're different. They often have fees attached.
Mm.
And those fees, they take money away from the local economy. Think about it. Those transaction fees, they usually go to big financial institutions somewhere else.
Right, right. They're not staying in the community.
Exactly. And there's a quote in CVAproblem.pdf that really stuck with me. Someone says, "In a cashless society, even the smallest transaction benefits big finance and big fintech."
Hmm. That's a powerful statement.
It is, and it forces us to think, are we accidentally making things worse? When we push for going cashless, are we actually hurting the people we're trying to help?
It's a question worth asking, for sure.
We need to be mindful. The goal is to empower people, not to prop up these big financial systems.
Yeah, we need to think about the impact of our actions, even when our intentions are good.
Absolutely. It's not just about getting the aid to people, it's about how we do it and what happens afterward.
Right, we need to look at the whole system.
Exactly. We need to consider the ripple effects of our choices.
This whole deep dive is, wow, it's really eye-opening. You know, on the surface, giving people cash or vouchers seems pretty simple.
It does, doesn't it?
But as we've been talking, there's like all these layers.
So many layers.
The types of CVA, making sure everyone's on the same page, who has the power, is it ethical, and then how it all affects local economies, you know?
Yeah. It's about way more than just handing over money or a voucher.
It is. It's about making sure the system actually helps people.
It is. It's about how we design systems to like truly empower people, help them build resilience. And I think CVA problem.pdf does a good job of laying that out.
Yeah, it does. And they don't just focus on the problems. They also like hint at some solutions.
Right. Or at least ways to think about the problem differently.
Exactly. And it seems like they're pushing for a more like a bigger picture approach to CVA.
Yeah, more systemic approach.
One that's not just about putting out fires, but about building systems that can handle the heat, so to speak.
That's a good way to put it. Instead of just reacting to crises, they want us to think about how to build more resilient systems from the ground up.
Right. Like we talked about central banks.
Yes.
What if they were more involved in planning for CVA?
Exactly. It's such an obvious solution when you think about it. What if they were part of disaster preparedness? Helping countries create the financial infrastructure and the tools they need to handle those big economic shocks.
That's a really interesting thought. Instead of just calling them in to clean up the mess afterward.
Right. It's about shifting from like a reactive mindset to a more proactive one.
Totally. And it reminds me of that whole idea of localization and development work,
It's all connected.
empowering communities to take charge of their own development.
Absolutely. Recognizing that sustainable solutions, the ones that really work, they come from within.
So instead of just parachuting in with aid, we're investing in systems that can help communities actually thrive over the long term.
Precisely. It's about building up their capacity, not just giving them temporary relief.
I'm really starting to see how CVA could be this like catalyst for a much bigger change in how we think about development assistance.
Exciting, isn't it? It's not just about aid anymore. It's about investing in people and their potential.
It's about helping them build a future for themselves.
Exactly. And I think that's what makes CVA so powerful. It has that potential. But, you know, CVA problem.pdf also raises these concerns about how sometimes these programs end up benefiting the big guys more than the people they're supposed to be helping.
Oh, right. They talk about how big banks and financial tech companies can profit from CVA.
Right. Oh, it goes back to that idea. In a cashless society, every transaction, every little thing you do can generate profits for big finance and big fintech, as they put it.
Yeah. We talked about that. It's like we have to be really careful that our aid money isn't just propping up systems that are actually taking advantage of the communities we're trying to support.
Exactly.
So, are they saying that we should never use digital payments for CVA?
No, not necessarily. But it's about being aware. Right? About those potential downsides. We have to design systems that put the needs of the people first.
Right, not the interest of the big institutions.
Exactly. It's about prioritizing the recipients.
So, how do we do that? How do we make sure CVA is really working for the people it's supposed to be helping?
We ask the right questions. Are we really understanding the local context, the specific needs of the community? Are we thinking about the downsides of digital systems, the exclusion, the surveillance, the value
All
extraction?
those things we talked about.
Yes. And are we involving local communities in the design and implementation of these programs?
So they have a say in how it all works.
Exactly. It sounds obvious, but it's often overlooked.
It seems like a lot of it comes down to like planning carefully and being intentional about how we approach CVA.
Absolutely. We need to move beyond just seeing CDA as this way to deliver aid. We have to start thinking about it as a tool for building these more resilient, more equitable systems in the long run.
That's a good way to put it. And this whole conversation is making me think that CVA is really part of a much bigger conversation about the future of humanitarian aid in general.
That's a great observation. I think you're right. CVA is forcing us to rethink all these assumptions. How should aid work? Who really has the power? And what does real empowerment actually look like?
Yeah, big questions.
It's challenging us to find better solutions, more sustainable solutions, more equitable solutions.
I like that. It's a challenge, but a good one.
Yeah.
This deep dive has given me a lot to think about. But before we wrap things up, is there anything else you think is important? Anything else from the source material that our listeners should know?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thought. It really ties into what we've been talking about, you know, this whole idea of localization and how sustainable development really depends on empowering communities themselves.
So it's less about like swooping in with a quick fix and more about helping communities build something that will last.
Exactly. Like imagine, you know, investing in financial literacy programs, supporting those local businesses and creating financial systems that are more inclusive, especially in communities that have been marginalized.
Right. Giving people the tools and the know-how to create a better future for themselves.
That's the goal. And it's almost like, you know, if you think about it, a preventative approach to aid.
Oh, interesting.
Trying to soften the blow of future crises by making communities stronger from the inside out.
I see. So we're kind of tackling the root causes instead of just the symptoms.
Exactly. And that brings us back to CVA. If we can get better at, you know, designing these programs, these CVA programs, and really make sure they empower the people they're supposed to help, it can spark some real positive change.
So CVA, it's not just about handing out money or vouchers. It's about using it as a tool to address those bigger issues, those systemic issues that make people vulnerable in the first place.
Right. It's about shifting the power dynamic in the aid world, realizing that true empowerment, it comes from within the communities themselves.
This has been, wow, quite a deep dive.
It has.
We started with this seemingly simple concept,
yeah.
You know, giving people cash or vouchers. But we ended up talking about some pretty big things, power, equity, and the future of aid itself.
It's amazing how these things connect, isn't it? It just shows that even the simplest ideas can have these, like, really profound implications.
So before we wrap up, is there anything else you want our listeners to take away from all of this?
I want them to think about this. Could focusing on strengthening local financial systems be a more sustainable way to approach humanitarian aid in the long run? You know, remember we talked about central banking, financial inclusion, and how cash versus digital payments have different effects? What if instead of just reacting to crises, we invested in making communities more resilient, more ready to handle them?
That's a really great question. And if you want to learn more about the different types of CVA, you know, cash, vouchers, all that, and the arguments for and against those conditionalities, I'd recommend checking out cvablog.pdf. It gives a really good overview. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. It's been really eye-opening.